Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th hour across Tyler Saturday Time Congregation. Now it's at the 12th hour. And the Elgin, Texas, today is April 30th, 2025. Or the 4th day of Ziv 2029, we will start our first service today with a continuation of Patriarchs and Prophets on Chapter 2 of Ellen G. White, page 44. And it says that by the word of the Yahweh, were the heavens made and all of the host of them by the breath of his mouth, for he spake and it was, he commanded and it stood fast. He laid the foundation of the earth that it should not be removed forever. As the earth came forth from the hand of its maker, it was exceedingly beautiful, for its surface was diversified with the mountains, hills, and plains, interspersed with the noble rivers and lovely lakes, that the hills and mountains were not abrupt and rugged, abounding in the terrible steep and frightful chasms, as they now do, for the sharp, ragged edges of the earth's rocky frame were buried beneath the fruitful soil, which everywhere produced a luxuriant growth of the verdure. For there was no loathsome swamp, nor barren desert, graceful shrubs and delicate flowers greeted the eye at every turn, where the heights were crowned with the trees more majestic than any that now exist, for the air untainted by the foul moxon was clear and helpful, for the entire landscape outvied in the beauty the decorated grounds of the proudest palace. For the angelic host viewed the scene with the delight and rejoiced at the wonderful works of the Yahweh. As the earth, with its teeming animal and vegetable life, had been called into the existence, man, with the crowning work of the Creator, and the one for whom the beautiful earth had been fitted up, was brought upon the stage of the action. Unto him was given the dominion over all that his eye could behold. For the Father said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth. So the Yahweh created the man in his own image. Male and female created he them. Here is with the clarity set forth the origin of the human race, and the divine record is so plainly stated that there is no occasion for the erroneous conclusions. For the Yahweh created a man in his own image. Here is no mystery, for there is no ground for the supposition that the man was evolved by the slow decrease of the development from the lower form to the animal or the vegetable life, such teachings lowers the great work of the Creator unto the level of the man's no earthly conception. Men are so intent upon the exclusion of the Yahweh from the sovereignty of the universe that they degrade the man and defraud him of the dignity of his origin. He has set the starry worlds on the high and tended with the delicate skill the flowers of the field, who fill the earth and the heaven with the wonders of his power. When he came to crown his glorious work, to place one in the midst, to stand as the ruler of the fair earth, did not fail to create a being worthy of the hand that gave him life. For the genealogy of our race, as given by the inspiration, traces back its origin not unto a line of the developing germs, mollusk, and quadrupeds, but unto the great Creator, as though formed from the dust. Adam was and is the son of the Yahweh, for he was placed as the Yahweh's representative over the lower orders of the being. They cannot understand or acknowledge the sovereignty of the Yahweh, yet they were made capable of the loving and serving man. For the psalmist says, "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hand. Thou hast put all things under his feet. For the beast of the field, the fowl of the air, and whatsoever passes through the paths of the sea, man was to bear Yahweh's image both in outward resemblance and in the character. For Yahshua alone is as the express image of his father Yahweh, the man is formed in the likeness of the father Yahweh, for his nature was in the harmony with the will of Yahweh, for his mind was capable of the comprehending of the divine thing, for his affections were pure, and his appetites and passions were under and with the control of the reason, for he was holy and happy in the bearing of the image of the Yahweh and in the perfect obedience to his will. This man came forth from the hand of his Creator. He was of the lofty stature and perfect symmetry, for his countenance bore the ruddy tint of the health and glowed with the light of the life and joy. For the Adam's height was much greater than that of men who now inhabit the earth. He was somewhat less in stature, yet her form was noble, and full of beauty, for the sinless pair were no artificial wore no artificial garments, for they were clothed with a covering of the light and glory, such as the angels wear, so long as they lived in the obedience unto the Yahweh, the Father's will. This robe of light continued to enshroud them. After the creation of the Adam, every living creature was brought before him for the receiving of his name, for he saw that unto each had been given a companion, but among them there was not found an helpmate for him, Adam. Among all of the creatures that Yahweh had made on the earth, there was not one equal unto man. And Yahweh said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him." Man was not made to dwell in solitude, for he was to be a social being. Without companionship, the beautiful scene and delightful performance of the Eden would have failed to yield perfect happiness. Even a communion with the angel could not have satisfied his desire for the sympathy and companionship. There were none of the same nature to love and to be loved. For Yahweh himself gave Adam a companion, for he provided a helpmate for him, a helper corresponding unto him, one who was fitted to be his companion, and who could be one with him in love and sympathy. Eve was created from a rib taken from the side of the Adam, signifying that she was not to control him as the head, nor to be trampled under his feet as an inferior, but to stand by his side as an equal, to be loved and protected by him, for a part of the man's bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh, she was his second self, showing the close union and the affectionate attachment that should exist in this relation. No man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourished and cherished it. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one. For Yahweh celebrated their first marriage. Thus the institution has for its originator the creator of the universe. Marriage is honorable. It was one of the first gifts of Yahweh unto man, and it is one of the two institutions that after the fall, Adam brought with him beyond the gates of the paradise, when the divine principles are recognized and obeyed in the relation. Marriage is a blessing. that guards the purity and happiness of the rest. It provides for the man's social needs, for it elevates the physical, the intellectual, and the moral nature. And Yahweh planted a garden eastward in the Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Everything that Yahweh had made was in the perfection of the beauty, and nothing seemed wanting just to contribute unto the happiness of the holy pair. Yet the Creator gave them still another token of his love by the preparing of a garden especially for their home. In this garden were the trees of every variety, many of them laden with the fragrant and delicious fruit, for there were lovely vines growing upright, yet presenting a most graceful appearance, with their branches drooping under the lure of the tempting fruit of the richest and most varied hue. It was a work of the Adam and Eve to train the branches of the vine to form the bowers, thus making for themselves a dwelling from the living trees covered with the foliage and fruit. There were fragrant flowers of every hue and the rich profusion. In the midst of the garden stood the tree of the life, surpassing in the glory of all other trees. Its fruit appeared like apples of gold and silver, and had the power to perpetuate life. For the creation was now complete, for the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And the Yahweh saw every thing that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Eden bloomed on the earth. Adam and Eve had free access into the tree of the life. No taint of the sin or shadow of the death marred the fair creation, for the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of Yahweh shouted for the joy, for the great Yahweh had laid the foundation of the earth, for he had dressed the whole world in the garb of the beauty, and had filled it with the things useful unto man, for he had created all of the wonders of the land and of the sea. In 6 days, the great work of the creation had been accomplished. The Yahweh rested on the seventh day from all of his work which he had made. And the Yahweh blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all of his works which Yahweh created and did. For Yahweh looked with satisfaction upon the work of his hands. All was perfect, worthy of his divine author, and he rested not as one weary, but as well pleased with the fruits of his wisdom and goodness, and the manifestations of his glory. After the resting upon the seventh day, the Yahweh sanctified it, or set it apart as a day of the rest for the man's hand. for the following of the example of their Creator, man was to rest upon this sacred day, that as he should look upon the heaven and the earth, that he might reflect upon the Yahweh's great work of the creation, and that as he should behold the evidences of the Yahweh's wisdom and goodness, his heart might be filled with the love and reverence for his Maker. In the Eden, Yahweh set up the memorial of his work of the creation, and the placing of his blessing upon the seventh day for the Sabbath is committed to the Adam, or it was committed unto the Adam as the father and representative of the whole human family, for its observance was to be an act of the grateful acknowledgement on the part of all who should dwell upon the earth, that the Yahweh was their creator and the rightful sovereign, that they were the work of his hand and the subjects of his authority. Thus the institution was a holy commemorative and given unto all mankind. There was nothing in it shadowy or of a restricted application by any under any people. For Yahweh saw that the Sabbath was essential for the man, even in the paradise, for he needed to lay aside his own interests and pursuits for one day of the Sabbath, that he might more fully contemplate the works of Yahweh and meditate upon his power and goodness, for he needed a Sabbath to remind him more vividly of the Father and to awaken gratitude, because all that he enjoyed and possessed came from the beneficent hand of the Creator. For Yahweh designed that the Sabbath shall direct the minds of men to the contemplation of his created work. For the nature speaks unto their senses, declaring that there is a living Yahweh as a creator, as the supreme ruler of all. For the heavens declare the glory of the Father Yahweh, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. For the beauty that clothes the earth is as a token of Yahweh's love. For we may behold it in the everlasting hills, and the lofty trees, and the opening buds, and the delicate flowers. For all speak unto us of Yahweh, for the Sabbath ever point unto him who made them all, bids men to open their great book of the nature and trace therein their wisdom, as the power and the love that is of the power and the love of the Creator. Our first parents, though created innocent and holy, were not placed beyond the possibility of the wrongdoing, for Yahweh made them free moral agents, capable of the appreciation of the wisdom and benevolence of his character, and the justice of his requirements, and with the full liberty for the yielding or for the withholding obedience, for they were to enjoy communion with the Father and with the holy angels. But before that could be rendered eternally secure, the loyalty must be tested. At the very beginning of the man's existence, a check was placed upon the desire for the self-indulgence, the fatal passion that lay at the foundation of the Satan's fall, the tree of the knowledge, which stood near the tree of the life in the midst of the garden, was to be a test of the obedience, faith, and love of our first parent, while permitted to eat freely of every other tree, for they were forbidden to taste of this on the pain of death. They were also to be exposed unto the temptations of the Satan, but if they endured the trial, they would finally be placed beyond his power to enjoy the perpetual favor with the Father Yahweh. For Yahweh placed man under the law as an indispensable condition of his very existence, for he was a subject of the divine government, and there can be no government without the law. For the Yahweh might have created man without the power to transgress his law, for he might have withheld the hand of the Adam from the touching of the forbidden fruit. But in that case, man would have been not as a free moral agent, but as a mere automation. Without the freedom of the choice, his obedience would not have been voluntary, but forced. There could have been no development of the character. Such a course would have been contrary unto Yahweh's plan in the dealing with the inhabitants of other worlds. It would have been unworthy of man as an intelligent being, and would have sustained Satan's charge of the Yahweh's arbitrary rule. For Yahweh made him upright, he gave him a noble trace of the character, with no bias toward evil. He endowed him with the high intellectual powers, and presented before him the strongest possible inducement to be true and to his allegiance, for the obedience perfect and perpetual was the condition of the eternal happiness. On this condition he was to have access unto the tree of life. For the home of our first parents was to be a pattern for the other home, as their children should go forth for the occupying of the earth, that home, beautified by the hand of Yahweh himself, was not a gorgeous place. Men in their pride delight in the magnificence and costly edifices and glory in their works of their own hand. But Yahweh placed Adam in a garden. This was his dwelling. The blue heaven were its dome, the earth with its delicate flowers and tropic, as the living green was its flower, and the leafy branches of the goodly tree were its canopy. Its walls were hung with the most magnificent adornment for the handiwork of the great master artist, and the surroundings of the holy pair was a lesson for all time that the true happiness is found not in the indulgence of the pride and luxury, but in the communion with the Father through his creative works. If the man would give less attention unto the artificial and would cultivate the greater simplicity, he would come far nearer to answering the purpose of the Yahweh and their creation, for their pride and ambition are never satisfied. But those who are truly wise will find the substantial and elevating pleasure and the sources of the enjoyment that Yahweh has placed within the reach of all. For the dwellers in the Eden was committed the care of the garden, to dress it and to keep it. Their occupation was not wearisome, but pleasant and invigorating. So Yahweh appointed labor as a blessing unto man, to occupy his mind, to strengthen his body, and to develop his faculties. In the mental and physical activity, Adam found one of the highest pleasures of his holy existence. And when, as a result of his disobedience, he was driven from the beautiful home and forced to struggle with a stubborn soul to gain his daily bread. That very labor, although widely different from his pleasant occupation in the garden, was a safeguard against the temptation and a source of the happiness. Those who regard work as a curse, attended though it be with awareness and pain, are cherishing an error. For the rich often look down with the contempt upon their working classes, but this is wholly at variance with the Yahweh the Father, a purpose in this created man. What are the possessions of the even the most wealthy in comparison with the heritage given unto the Lord, lordly Adam? Yet Adam was not to be idle. Our Creator, who understands what is for the man's happiness, appointed Adam his work, for the true joy of the life is found only by the working men and women, for the angels are diligent workers, for they are the ministers of the Yahweh for the children of men. For the Creator has prepared no place for the stagnating practice of the intellect. While they remained true unto Yahweh, Adam and his companion were to bear rule over the earth. Unlimited control was given them over every living thing, for the lion and the lamb sported peacefully around them, or lay down together at their feet, for the happy birds have flitted about them without fear, and as their glad songs ascended unto the praise of their Creator, Adam and Eve are united with them in the thanksgiving unto the Father and the Son. For the Holy Spirit were not only children with the fatherly care of the Father, Yahweh, but with the students receiving instruction from the all-wise Creator, they were visited by the angels and were granted communion with the Maker. There's no obscuring, a veil between, for they were full of the vigor and parted by the tree of the life, and their intellectual power was but little less than that of the angels. For the mysteries of the visible universe, the wondrous works of Him, who is perfect in the knowledge, afforded them an inexhaustible source of the instruction and delight. For the laws and operations of the nation, which have engaged men steady for 6,000 years, were open unto their minds by the infinite framer and upholder of all. For they held converse with the leaf and flower and tree, gathering from each of the secrets of its life, with every living creature, from the mighty Leviathan that passed among the waters, unto the insect mote that floats in the sunbeam, Adam was familiar, for he had given unto each its name, and he was acquainted with the nature and habits of all. For Yahweh's glory in the heaven, the innumerable worlds, and their orderly revolution, the balancing of the clouds, the mysteries of the light and sound of the day and night, all were open unto the study of our first time. On every leaf of the forest or stone of the mountains, and every shining star in the earth and air and sky, Yahweh's name was written, for the order and harmony of the creation spoke unto them of the infinite wisdom and power. For they were ever discovering some attraction that filled their hearts with the deepest love, and call forth fresh expressions of the gratitude. So long as they remained loyal unto the divine law, their capacity for the knowing, for the enjoying, and for the loving would continually increase, for they would be constantly gaining new treasures of the knowledge by the discovering of the fresh springs of the happiness, and obtaining clearer and yet clearer conceptions of the immeasurable, unfailing love of the Father Yahweh. Oh, that's the end of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Entitled The Temptation and Fall. Okay, it says no longer free. Okay, we're going to go in now to the temptation and fall. We're on page 52, Patriarchs and Prophets, no longer free, for the stirring up of the rebellion in heaven, Satan's enmity against Yahweh found a new field in the plotting of the ruin of the human race and the happiness and peace of the holy pair in the Eden. He beheld a vision of the bliss that unto him was forever lost, moved by the envy, for he determined for the inciting them unto disobedience and bring upon them the guilt and penalty of the sin, for he would change their love to distrust, and the songs of the praise unto the reproaches against their Maker. Thus he would not only plunge these innocent beings into the same misery which he was himself enduring, but would cast dishonor upon the Yahweh and cause grief in the heaven. For our first parents were not left without a warning of the danger that threatened them. For the heavenly messengers opened unto them the history of the Satan's fall and his plots for their destruction, unfolding more fully the nature of the divine government, that the prince of the evil was is trying to overthrow, for it is by the disobedience to the just commands of the Yahweh that the Satan and his host had fallen. How important then that Adam and Eve should honor that law by which alone it was possible for order and equity to be maintained. For the law of Yahweh is as sacred as himself, for it is a revelation of his will, a transcript of his character, with the expressions of the divine love and wisdom. For the harmony of the creation depends upon the perfect conformity of all beings of the everything, animate and inanimate, to the law and to of the Creator. Yahweh has ordained laws for the government not only of the divine beings, but of all the operations of the nature. Everything is under the fixed law, which cannot be disregarded. But while everything in the nature is governed by the natural laws, man alone of all that inhabits the earth is amenable unto the moral law. Unto man, with the crowning work of the creation, for the Yahweh has given power for the understanding of his requirements, for the comprehending of the justice and beneficence of his law, and his sacred claims upon him and of the man answering obedience is required. Likewise, like the angels, the dwellers in Edom had been placed upon the probation, with their happy estate could be retained only for their happy estate. Could be retained only on the condition of the fidelity to the Creator's law, for they would obey and live, or disobey and perish. Yahweh has made them the recipients of the grace, blessing, but should they disregard his will, he who spared not the angels that sinned should not spare them, for the transgression would forfeit his gifts and bring upon them misery and ruin. For the angels warned them to be on their guard against the devices of the Satan. For the ensnaring them would be unwearied while they were obedient unto the Father Yahweh. The evil one could not harm them, for if need be, every angel in heaven would be sent to their help if they steadfastly repelled his first institution. They would be as secure as a heavenly messenger. But should they once yield to temptation, their nature would become so depraved that in themselves they would have no power and no disposition to resist Satan. For the tree of the knowledge had been made a test of their obedience and their love unto Yahweh, for Yahweh has seen fit to lay upon them the one prohibition as to the use of all that was in the garden. But if they should disregard his will in this particular, they would incur the guilt of the transgression. Satan was not to follow them with the continual temptation. He could have access unto them only at the forbidden tree. Should they attempt to investigate its nature, they would be exposed to his wiles. They were admonished to give careful heed unto the warning which Yahweh had sent them, and to be content with the instruction which he had seen fit to impart. In the order for the accomplishing of his work unperceived, Satan chose to employ as his medium the serpent, with a disguise well adapted for his purpose of the deception. For the serpent was then one of the wisest and most beautiful creatures on the earth, for it had the wings and, while flying through the air, presented an appearance of the dazzling brightness, having the color and brilliancy of the burnished gold. Resting in the rich laden branches of the forbidden tree and wriggling itself with the delicious fruit, it was an object to arrest the attention and delight the eye of the beholder. Thus, in the garden of the tree, lurked the destroyer, watching for his prey. For the angels had cautioned Eve to beware of the separating herself from her husband while occupied in their daily labor in the garden. With him, she would be in less danger from the temptation than if she were alone. But absorbed in her pleasing task, then she unconscientiously wandered from his side. On the perceiving that she was alone, she felt an apprehension of the danger but dismissed her fears, deciding that she has sufficient wisdom and strength to discern evil and to withstand it. Unmindful of the angel's caution, she soon found herself gazing with the mingled curiosity and admiration upon the forbidden fruit. The fruit was very beautiful, and she questioned with herself why Yahweh had withheld it from them. Now was the tempter's opportunity, as if he were able to discern the workings of her mind. He addressed her, "Yea, hath Yahweh said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden." Eve was surprised and startled as she thus seemed to honor the echo of her, to hear the, she seemed to hear the echo of her thought, but the serpent continued in a musical voice with the subtle praise of her surpassing loveliness, and his words were not displeasing. Instead of fleeing upon the spot, she lingered wonderingly to hear a serpent speak. Had she been addressed by a being like the angel, her fears would have been excited, but she had no thought that the fascinating serpent could become the medium of the fallen foe. To the tempter's ensnaring question, she replied, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Yahweh has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." And the serpent said unto the woman, "You shall not surely die, for Yahweh doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as the gods, knowing good and evil." By the partaking of the tree, he declared they would attain unto a more exalted sphere of the existence and enter a broader field of the knowledge, for he himself had eaten of the forbidden fruit. And as a result, had required the power of speech, and he insinuated that the Yahweh jealously desired to withhold it from them, lest they should be exalted to equality with him. It was because of this wonderful property, imparting wisdom and power, that he had prohibited them from tasting or even touching it. For the tempter intimated that the divine warning was not to be actually fulfilled. It was designed merely to intimidate them. How could it be possible for them to die, had they not eaten of the tree of the life? For Yahweh had been seeking to prevent them from reaching a nobler development and finding greater happiness. Such has been Satan's work from the days of the Adam I'm here to present, and he has pursued it with great success. For he tempts men to distrust Yahweh's love and to doubt his wisdom. He is constantly seeking for the exciting of the spirit of the irreverent curiosity by a restless and crazy desire for the penetrating of the secrets of the divine wisdom and power in their efforts to search out what Yahweh has been pleased to withhold. Multitudes overlook the truth which he has revealed and which are essential for salvation. For the Satan tempts men to disobedience by leading them to believe they are entering a wonderful field of the knowledge. But this is all a deception related with their ideas of the perversion. They are, by the trampling on Yahweh's requirements, shitting their feet in the path that leads to the degradation and death. For the Satan represented to the Holy Spirit that they would be gainers by the breaking of the law of Yahweh. Do we not today hear similar reasoning? Many talk of the narrowness of those who obey the Yahweh's commandment, while they themselves claim to have broader ideas and to enjoy the greater liberty. What is this but an echo of the voice from the Eden? And the day you eat thereof, by the transgression of the divine requirement, for you shall be as the gods. For the Satan claim that you have received great good by the eating of the forbidden fruit, but he did not let it appear that by the transgression he had become an outcast from the heaven, though he had found sin to result in the infinite loss. He concealed his own misery in the order to draw others into the same position. So now the transgressor seeks to disguise his true character. He may claim to be holy, but his exalted profession only makes him the more dangerous as a deceiver, for he is on the side of the Satan, trampling upon the law of Yahweh and leading others to do the same to their eternal ruin. Eve really believed the words of Satan, but her belief did not save her from the penalty of sin. She disbelieved the words of the Yahweh, and this was what led to her fall. In the judgment, men will not be condemned because they conscientiously believed a lie, but because they did not believe the truth in the first place, because they neglected the opportunity of learning what is the real truth. Notwithstanding the sophistry of the Satan, to the contrary, it is always disastrous to disobey the other. We must set our hearts to know what is the truth. All the lessons which Yahweh has taught to be placed on the record in his word are for our warning and instruction. They are given for the saving us from the deception, for the neglect will result in the ruin unto ourselves whatever contradicts Yahweh's word, we may be sure to receive condescension. For the serpent plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. Well, then he reminded her. I don't believe this. The Bible doesn't say Satan, the serpent, Satan, plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. Okay. Then he reminded her of her own words that Yahweh had forbidden them to touch it, lest they die. She would receive no more harm from eating the fruit, he declared, than from touching it, perceiving no evil result from what she had done. Eve grew bolder. When she saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eye, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat. It was grateful to the taste. As she ate, she seemed to feel a vivifying power, and imagine herself entering upon a higher state of the existence. Without a fear, she plucked and ate, and now having herself transgressed, she became the agent of the Satan and the working of the ruin of her husband, and a state of the strange, unnatural excitement with her hands filled with the forbidden fruit. She sought his presence and related all that had occurred. This brings in the best steps. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.